All right, welcome to the Fit Vegan Podcast. I'm your show host, Maxim Seguin, and I'm the founder and CEO of Fit Vegan Coaching, a company that is on a mission to help 10,000 people get lean, thrive, and reduce their risk of chronic illnesses by 2033 and a million by 2050. I believe that having a fit, healthy body and mind is the foundation to living an incredible life, and this is what the show will give you if you choose to listen and implement. Enjoy the episode and have a great day. All right. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Fit Vegan Podcast. Today, I'm joined by a very special guest, Chris Tucker, who's a private chef out here in Los Angeles. Chris's menu range from dessert spreads of perfectly balanced buttercream slathered atop delicate sponges, the most perfect cookies and countless flaky pastries, which we're going to talk about. You may have seen him on the judging panel of Peel, the first all-vegan culinary cooking competition. He's also appeared on countless daytime programs such as Inside Edition, California Live, and ABC's On the Red Carpet. He was featured in Cosmopolitan magazine for Pride Month, and he'll be where he's also providing the vegan dessert for Elton John's Oscar party for the fourth year in a row. He also did the vegan dessert for Steven Tyler's Aerosmith Grammy party, which was a fundraiser for Janie's Fun. Chris is also entered his second year as the head of culinary for the Hollywood Climate Summit, a four-day event in Los Angeles that merges climate activism and the world of Hollywood. And he's constantly partnering with amazing people like PETA and the Human League. Chris, welcome to the show, Ed.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you've accomplished a lot.
Thank you. It's interesting when you hear it, like, you know, when you kind of hear your resume, you're like, oh, that's cool. Yeah. Oh, I remember when I did that. That was fun. You know, little things, it kind of always jogs your memory a little bit. And it's always a fun, like, little trip down memory lane when you get to hear that little intro. But yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. And so for the people listening, Chris and I met, I think, like a few weeks ago at the North American premiere of Christspiracy. And we just happened to grab, I guess it was a dinner. After the premiere. So yeah, Chris, man, let's dive into your story. Like my first question for you is what came first, being a chef or being vegan?
Being a chef, I would say. I would say was kind of always inherently a chef. I was born into like a family of people who gathered around the table constantly. Like I'm just from a very big foodie family. So one set of my grandparents were really into sweets and baked goods. And my Mimi definitely taught me everything I know about like the world of pastry and things like that. And then my other set of grandparents owned a restaurant, but it was all savory stuff. And so, you know, I learned everything I know from the savory side of my palate from them. So I was just kind of like, birthed into the, you know, the chef life, if you will. But it was something I obviously had an interest in because I gravitated towards it.
Yeah. And as I was doing research, where did you grow up? Because that kind of determines like the type of food that you've learned to make.
Totally. Yeah. I grew up in Florida, which most people probably don't think of it as the South, but it's as South as you can get when you think about America. And then my grandparents, their restaurant was in Georgia. And so we spent a lot of time going back and forth when we were, you know, like on Christmas break or anything from school. There was a portion of time where we lived there and helped them run the restaurant. But primarily, I grew up in Florida. And you know, it's all very much so the same cuisine. It's fried chicken. It's a lot of things that I would never eat now, like gator and shark and, you know, just some kind of like crazy things they kind of eat there, like things out of the swamp yards.
So I'm curious, like at what point into like your culinary journey did you become vegan, and how was it to have to adjust? Because you've learned how to cook not being vegan. So like at what point did you transition, and how was it for you to kind of change your cooking tools to be able to cook plant-based?
Yeah. You know, I've only been vegan for 5 years. So for me, which honestly, that wasn't that long into my chefing career. I've only been doing chef work for maybe about 7 years professionally. And so for me, there wasn't like a lot of there wasn't like a ton of clients that I had to, filter out or anything like that. But I, grew up using eggs and butter and dairy, like all of my baking recipes. To be quite honest, that's what held me back from going vegan because I just didn't know. So I had kind of trickled down to a pescatarian diet, but I didn't personally eat like any type of, I didn't consume dairy in a really heavy way. But when I was baking, I was still using eggs, I was still using butter because for me, I was like, I don't know how to achieve the goal without using these things. And finally, what did it for us was watching the documentary What the Health, which Kip Anderson also did, going off of Christspiracy, where we just met a couple weeks ago. But it was one of those things where we just watched it, and the very next day we cleaned everything else out of our fridge that wasn't vegan, and it was one of those things where I just had to figure it out, and I think it became really exciting. Like when I had to relearn all of my cake recipes or all of my cookie recipes or create new recipes, it became really exciting to me again because when you're doing the same thing for a while, it gets a little repetitious, it gets a little mundane. But when you're going into it with a completely new skill set or a completely new outlook, you have to use your skill sets in a different way. And so it was actually a lot of fun.
So what did that look like? Because I know when I look at a lot of non-vegan chefs or people that are baking pastry, like I said, there's a lot of eggs, there's a lot of butter. So how did you, what were some of those things that you were, worried about that you didn't know how to transition, and what was the solution on the flip side? Because we have a lot of our people are primarily vegan or like veg curious and looking to kind of transition. And I had some similar concerns. I'm sure they have similar concerns. So like, I love pastries. So how, what was the trick? Tell us the trick, Chris.
I think that, honestly, for me, it started out with finding a butter that I felt worked just like a normal dairy butter in recipes. So when we think about like the way that butter reacts in like a croissant dough, it releases moisture, it creates those air pockets. And so I was looking for something that would work in all different ways. So I could use it in all different recipes. Is it going to whip into a frosting like a buttercream, like a normal dairy butter would? Is it going to brown? Is it going to, fold into pastry doughs? And I found that. So I use Miyoko's. I'm don't have any attachment to them, but it's just the brand that I have personally found works the best for me. It's made out of cashews. And really, at the end of the day, cashews are a genius in the kitchen for anybody that's going plant-based because they brown, they bake, they do all different kinds of things in the kitchen that dairy used to do. So anything from like a cashew cream to a butter that's made with cashews, they act very similarly to the protein in dairy. So I would say that's a really good place to start. The other thing, though, is going to be your eggs. That's going to be a really interesting one, like transitioning into different recipes. And I would say there's no perfect one solution when it comes to eggs because every recipe kind of uses eggs for its own specific purpose. And so I use anything from like a traditional flax egg. I use probably the most common thing that I use is just a combination of baking soda, apple cider vinegar, and a little touch of oil. And that kind of creates the moisture of an egg. It creates the chemical reaction of an egg, and it creates the levity that you're looking for when using an egg in a recipe like a cake.
So I didn't know that. So he said apple cider vinegar, baking soda, and what's the other one? Oil?
And oil, yeah. So if you do a half a teaspoon of baking soda with 1 teaspoon of apple cider vinegar and 1 teaspoon of oil, you're basically going to mimic the structure of an egg. Because when you're using an egg in a recipe, it's giving moisture, it's also giving lift, and it's also binding sometimes. Again,
Yeah.
depending on what you're doing in the recipe for that egg specifically.
Does it give you that like that flaxseed texture? Like, you know, when you soak flaxseed to kind of make an egg, that consistency, or would it be served for like different, like other purposes?
It doesn't. So I think the flaxseed works really great in like a cookie. I think the flax egg is really great in like a cookie. Or I think the flax would work really great if you're doing something like gosh, pancakes or something like that. But in like a
Yeah.
cake, something that you're wanting like nice and bouncy. My preferred method is the baking soda method that I just mentioned because it doesn't weigh it down. And sometimes I feel like the flaxseed egg can get a little bit, it can do something to your recipe. It has a little bit of a gumminess to it if you mix it with
Yeah.
water. So that's why I think there's just so many different variations of egg for different recipes.
Okay, so I didn't know that. So ultimately, anything that would be more a little bit more solid, a little bit more dense, like you mentioned, a cookie or a pancake, you can go with the flax. But if you want more fluff to it, then going with the baking soda and apple cider vinegar.
Exactly. Yep.
Okay, I'm gonna tell Ivy that because she's been trying to make cake.
Yeah, the oil is also optional. Like I there's usually like if you're in your recipe and your recipe already has like enough oil to it, you may not even need to add any additional oil if it has enough moisture because you're really just looking to replace that moisture content that your egg was lending to that recipe.
Yeah. So, question about you've ever made I'll say it in English, but macaroons, macaron. So, we've made attempts at that, and it was a failed, really hard cookie, basically. So, how do you give it that texture on the vegan side if you're to make it at home?
So it's all about it's that so that's where I would use the aquafaba. That would be my egg
Okay.
replacer there. So that's where we would pop in the aquafaba as the egg replacer. We wouldn't use the baking soda at all. But we would it, that recipe is, regular macarons that you have egg whites in them, even that in itself is a very temperamental thing, right? Like
Yeah.
those are a very tricky thing for just a normal home baker to achieve. But there are recipes out there that use aquafaba, that use your other traditional staples like your powdered sugar and your almond flour, and it's all about the amount of everything that you're using. So if you're using the correct amounts of everything, you're able to make a vegan version and you can't tell the difference.
Okay. Man, we might have to cook a recipe video together and
Yeah, and
make some macarons.
it could have even been one of those things where the aquafaba, if you guys were using that, it wasn't like stable enough, it wasn't whipped enough, or maybe it was just the ratio of everything, but
Yeah.
it for sure works.
Okay. Damn. Again, I'll have to pass that off to Ivy. She's been on a like a pastry cooking kick, and she's been doing a good job. I like to revert back to kind of what the health when you mentioned that you watched that. What was it about the documentary that really clicked for you guys? Because there was an element of, you know, the companies and the government is more, it's not for your health, it's more for profit. There was the health component, there was a little bit of animal component. What was it that resonated with you guys at that point?
Do you know, I think it was really a combination of everything. I think it was one of those things where I've always had this connection to animals. Like I've always been like even I remember back when I was in elementary school and we got our first dog. Like I just remember being so connected to my dog, like as a young person and all the way growing up into high school with that dog. We had rabbits growing up, and we had, we had all just different kinds of animals. And I was always just really fascinated by them, really connected to them, I think, in a different way. And so to be a vegan now, it makes perfect sense. But to be watching What the Health and to be, triggered by like what actually happens in factory farms and things, like from the animal standpoint, that was very natural to me just because. And I think most people who aren't vegan, like if they actually saw what happens to get the food on their plate every day, they would be turned off as well. Like they would have a reaction to that as well. It's just a normal human thing. But I think, we also live in a time where we have to be aware and conscious of what's going on to our in our environment. And so, there were aspects of that and just, kind of how the government's in bed with all of these corporations and how it's all just kind of, funneled back into each other. The money is just a stream back into the it's all for profit, basically. And so, these companies are making you sick to just have to take their medicine. So they're recommending certain diets and it was just all extremely fascinating to me. And yeah, I mean, so much so that we stopped eating it.
It just feels like the on a small scale, like the dentist giving you a lollipop after you went to go see him, right? It's like, hey, just
Exactly.
I'll see you in a few months. Keep eating those, that sugar. We got
Exactly.
reoccurring business. What was your we talked a little bit about it after the documentary, but how did that tie in for you to kind of watch Christspiracy after having transitioned from What the Health, which is just like a confirmation? I'm curious as to like what were your thoughts on it?
Well, it was really interesting for me because I grew up very religious. I grew up Southern Baptist, and it's always been a very interesting thing for me as an adult because it just never really made sense to me. Some of the things that were taught in the Southern Baptist community just never really made sense. And so, the older that I'm getting, the more that I'm unpacking, the more that I'm like doing my own research, I'm like, oh, well, this is just kind of years of misinterpretation of things that has landed us to where we are today in the, in the biblical teachings of where we are now. And so I think watching Christspiracy and kind of seeing all of that unfold was a very similar experience that I had with homosexuality because it's kind of the same exact thing. Like, and the Bible doesn't actually talk about homosexuality. If you dig deep into it, it's again something that the church nowadays, and I won't say the entire church because not every church does this. There are very welcoming and accepting communities out there. But the Southern Baptist Church, I will use them as an example, they would tell you that homosexuals are going to hell and they would point to a verse, but that's just an interpretation of something that has been misrepresented from back in the day. And they slap a new King James Version on it. And so it was just very reminiscent of a lot of that to me. So it brought up a little bit of darkness, if I'm going to be completely honest, because I'm like, oh, we're uncovering something else that's not true, And so I think it was really kind of eye-opening to see because I don't remember going to a church picnic or an Easter service that didn't have fried chicken or a big leg of lamb or a big, piece of meat that it revolved around. And so I think it really they did an incredible job. I think that's one thing that Kip always does is his research around everything is just always, incredible. So yeah.
Yeah, it was cool to see it go back to its original source and to see how people have changed the interpretation of certain words to kind of have a, I don't want to say an agenda behind it, but to me, it was crazy to see that the meat industry has been around. Like, it's the oldest industry ever, ultimately. Yeah. I think it is. Yeah, it would have to be. And to see how the agenda of like changing the meaning of certain words was to help support that industry and to kind of shy attention away from it. So yeah, for the people that haven't listened to it, listen to it.
100%. Yeah, and it all goes back to money at the end of the day. And I think that's the connection kind of to what the health, right? Is it all goes back to money. It's all a circle of money. And I think we can see that now even in our existing government today. Like, so it's been happening for thousands of years.
Yeah. So obviously, I feel like you're playing a big role in helping people step away from that industry and start to eat more plant-based. Like I mentioned before we started, you've been able to cook for some pretty big events, and you know, LA is a kind of a good spot for people to, I think, be open to plant-based eating. So I'm curious, like, what kind of transition did you see in terms of plant-based eating since you became a chef? I think you mentioned about like 7 years ago, and then at the 5 year mark going vegan and up until now.
I mean, I think that we have just had such an innovation with our products in the past, I would say, 3 years, definitely in the past 5 years. The innovation in the plant-based space is just incredible. And so I think what's happening is that less and less people are having an excuse not to be vegan. Like there's less of an excuse for people to say, oh, the cheese is gross, or the alternatives aren't good. Well, first of all, like, you don't really need to have any of that stuff to have a great plant-based meal. Like, you can eat, if your food is seasoned properly, you can have grains and you can have vegetables and you can have a balanced diet with not eating any alternative meats or dairy at all. And be completely satiated, right? Like, you can just have a really fulfilling, delicious life when it comes to food and never have to walk down the frozen food section of the grocery store. But I will say that we have to make a space for the people that are going to always need those meat alternatives, the dairy alternatives. And I use them all the time. Like, I don't want to, I'm not a whole food plant-based diet kind of person. I do love eating that way, but I'm also a chef. So I try products constantly that are popping up. And I think that we just have done an incredible job in the innovation of making things come to market that people just can't deny because they're really tasty. Yeah. And so if you go to an event or if you go to a restaurant and it's less about a dish being vegan or not vegan, and it's just about it being really good food, people don't care. Like, people don't care that they're not having a charcuterie table that's full of, you know, dead animals if it's just satiating and delicious. And I think that's what people are starting to realize, especially more in event spaces, that you can really create things for people that are delicious and tasty without jeopardizing, you know, maybe your personal feelings.
Yeah. And I agree with you. There is a space, I think, for those products, for the people that are looking to transition, or just it's better for them to kind of eat that than to eat a steak, right? Or a chicken breast. And so, yeah, I agree with that. I understand that eating whole food plant-based for the majority of North America probably won't happen. But as long as eat their fruits and vegetables and grains, and it's at least a step in the right direction. So I'm curious, you mentioned whole foods. So when you combine the spices properly, what is your favorite combination of spices to put together in a dish? Because we're looking to kind of spice our stuff up.
Well, I think people have a misconception that if you like chop up, like if you're making your meal and you're sauteing like onion and garlic, and you're, let's just say you're making kale and you're sauteing onion and garlic and it's caramelized down and then you add your kale, you should still like hit that seasoning in there, right? So you should still go in with some onion powder. You should still go in with some garlic powder, like just reinforce the seasoning. And I think that's what really flavors the food. Like if you're hitting your food with the proper, like, balance of flavor as well. Like, remember, you should be putting a little bit not everything should have a little bit of salt in there. If you don't want to use salt, you can use your liquid aminos. You could use soy sauce. That's going to add in a little bit of umami flavor as well. So a lot of times I will leave sauce out, salt out, but I will add soy sauce or tamari or liquid aminos, because those have, they give you the saltiness, but they also give you some umami. So where a lot of our palates are missing that meaty flavor, we are just actually missing the umami taste that we're used to getting from meat. So you can always just use one of those things and use that in a replacer for your salt. But you also want to get like, you want to get all of those spices in there. So finding ways to like use your smoked paprika to add smokiness to a dish, finding ways to use like crushed chipotle peppers, because they're not super spicy. They just add a little bit of smokiness. So that's something too. Like if I'm doing a textured vegetable protein, like taco meat, or if I'm just doing like mushrooms in the style of taco meat, I will always throw in some smoked paprika and also some crushed chipotle chilies, because it's not really adding heat. It's just adding a lot of smokiness. And I think those are great things to just keep in the spice drawer.
So talking about taco meat, have you ever made any like meat textures that wouldn't be like the processed vegan food? Like I know some people you will use mushrooms or like lion's mane or oyster. Have you experimented with any of those or any other foods that potentially people wouldn't think of using, but it actually would be a good texture?
So the biggest thing that I tell people to use is textured vegetable protein, because it's still a whole food. You know, if you're somebody who eats a whole food plant-based diet, that would still be considered, part of that. But it's so versatile. So you can literally keep a bag of it in your pantry itself. It's shelf stable. It's super affordable, and you can make taco meat with it. You can put it in your spaghetti sauce and make it more of like a bolognese. You could put it in chili. There's just so many uses for it. Chicken salad. So really, when it comes to like something that I keep on hand, it's tofu and it's textured vegetable protein, because you can make those two things taste as meaty as you want them to.
So, let's go to the cooking show, because I'm sure you've kind of tasted some interesting stuff. I used to love watching cooking shows before I went vegan, and then after I went vegan, I was like, ah, there's nothing out there anymore. So I think this was one of the first ones, right? Because Bobby told me that he worked on that show as well. I think like behind the scenes with the camera, he's the one that kind of introduced me to the show. So how was it to kind of to judge that? And is there going to be more episodes of that?
Yeah, it was a really fun time. And actually, that's why they created the show, because they themselves loved cooking shows, and the producers were all vegan. They were like, we can't watch them anymore. And so they themselves kind of created the show out of a necessity to have something that they could watch. So we filmed the show about 2 years now. It's been about 2 years since we shot those, and we shot those episodes in Vegas at a soundstage, and we had a lot of fun doing it. But I don't know that there's going to be any more episodes of that. I think they shopped it around and tried to sell the show after. That was kind of their whole goal, was to shoot more or less a concept. And I never say never. I think, again, as we continue to grow as like a society, and we continue to see the whole everybody as a whole shift to like more plant forward, I would say, meals. I don't know, maybe there'll be more of an appetite for it then, but we definitely had a good time shooting it.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, I would have loved to be a judge on that show. Just taste some delicious food. Yeah, hopefully, again, I think the plant-based movement is growing more and more in popularity. Again, maybe we're just in a little bubble of LA because obviously plant-based is really popular here. So I like to kind of go back to kind of when you transitioned to veganism, because I thought about that as you were sharing, like people watching the show and it being a big influence on me kind of growing up and wasn't vegan at the time, but kind of watching those shows. How did your surroundings take it, or your family take it, when you went vegan? Because I grew up in a farm setting as well. Like, we actually used to kill our own chicken. We had horses, we had cows. Like, I grew up in that world as well. Yeah. And it wasn't as well received as I wanted it when I transitioned. So I'm curious kind of like how you dealt with it.
Do you know what's interesting? I'm actually the, you know, I'm all the way out in LA. The rest of my family lives in Florida still. So I come from a pretty large family, and they are all very close to each other still, you know, just 20 minutes outside of Orlando. And my family's kind of always been like very, very accepting of whatever I'm doing. Like, oh, you're, you know, like, amazing. You're gonna go vegan. Great. Go vegan. Cool. When I would go home, you know, when we go home to visit, they make sure that we go to places that have vegan options for us, or, you know, I cook, or, you know, whatever the case may be. So I think it was, I actually think it was pretty easy. I mean, we weren't really inconveniencing their lives, because we weren't, you know, we don't go there that often. We go maybe once a year or so for holidays, but more times than not, my family travels to California because our weather's nicer than Florida. but honestly, honestly enough, my mom's 75 and she went vegan the last time she was out here. So she comes for about 2 weeks at a time. She'll come for a couple times a year. And just her being, you know, whenever she's here, she eats completely vegan because our house is vegan. And she really just kind of, the last time she was here, she was like, I think I'm just going to keep this up when I get home. Like, I feel better after the 2 weeks I'm here. And so I think that was about 8 months ago. And so been, you know, vegan ever since. And she'll be back in 2 weeks for her next visit. And, you know, she's actually met other people in her 55 and older community that are also plant-based. And so they have come together and, you know, they do little cooking classes and different things in their community. And so I think once you realize that even in a fried chicken eating kind of place like Florida, oh, other people are out here, they exist.
Yeah.
You don't feel like you're a rabbit eating salad all the time and we can actually make some fun out of this. Then, you know, not everybody's going to have the opportunity like us to live in LA in a community where veganism is thriving. But I think everybody has the opportunity to create community wherever they are, because there's going to be other people around that, you know, share your values, that, you know, want to connect about the same things, and you just have to look for it.
Yeah. Yeah. They're out there. There's a lot of lonely vegans in the center of, you know, United States that are looking for other people. What I do is I just wear my Fit Vegan shirt. And anytime I go to the gym or anytime I go somewhere, and then people come and ask like, hey, you vegan? Me too. And then it's like, you become friends instantly as soon as you have kind of like that shared, that common value together.
Exactly.
We'd love to ask you, in terms of like more like rapid round question, what are some of the necessities that you always have in your kitchen? You kind of like go-tos that you can't run out of.
The textured vegetable protein.
Yeah.
Tofu. So there's always tofu in the fridge and there's always tofu in the freezer. So the tofu in the freezer is kind of, you know, prepping for getting, for like thawing out and being ready to go. I usually also have a tofu like in my tofu press. So big tofu kind of person over here, egg salad, all kinds of things with tofu. Always have gluten-free pasta. I use Bonza pasta. I use it all the time. We eat pasta probably once a week with just that chickpea pasta.
It's high, so high in protein, especially if you add TVP in it. You're like 50 grams of protein for a normal plate.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you're set. And I think that's what's always so funny to me when people say, where do you get your protein from? And I'm like, well, where don't you get it? I don't know. Like people have this misconception that vegetables don't have protein, but they're actually the best protein source you can get. So it's really
Yeah.
funny. It's really all about educating people, about what's in things and, how to eat, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd love to ask you a fitness question.
Yeah.
Because when I know you're fit, like as we met in person, you cook pastry, you cook delicious food all the time, you're around this delicious food all the time. How do you manage to stay fit while kind of being around delicious food all the time? Because I've had the opportunity to work with a lot of chefs, and I feel there's like a few scenarios. One is they cook all day for other people, and when they get home, they're just like, I don't care. I just want pizzas and burgers because I don't want to cook anymore. Or some of them just love to cook so much that they just like overeat on their own food and they put on a bunch of weight. So I'm curious kind of like how you find balance between cooking and being around such delicious food, but also being able to stay fit.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think it is balance. And I come from a family that has weight issues. I've always had weight issues. I was 240 pounds in the 8th grade, and that's when I actually started my vegan journey, is so I eliminated beef and pork.
Okay.
And then I slowly just started taking away other things from there. But that was all for health reasons, right? I was
Yeah.
in 8th grade and I was 240 pounds. And you met me. I'm not nearly as tall as you are. I'm a normal 5'9" kind of person. And so that's in 8th grade, that I was an ex that's extreme. And so I knew, to me, that didn't make sense. So I started to just kind of take things into my own hands. My mom's always been a very normal sized weight, but my dad's side of the family, it's just in the genes.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's always front of my mind. Like, how active have I been today? What have I put in my mouth today? How much water have I consumed today? And it's just one of those things that's always been with me since, having those weight issues at such a young age. And so if I know that I'm having pizza for dinner, I'm definitely gonna be eating a salad for lunch. Or if I make poor food choices all day, then I'm getting 20,000 steps that day. So I try to just really be, I try to make sure that my movement goes along with what goes in my mouth,
Yeah.
as well as, just being very mindful about how I'm eating. If I'm eating a lot of processed food for a couple days, I can tell. My body tells me, like,
Yeah.
chill out and, get back on your whole food plant-based stuff. And then that's when I'll go back to the brown rice and eating, like, grilled veggies and just really simple things. And so I just try to listen to my body and do what I need to do.
Yeah, because anytime you start eating a bit more processed food, you just feel the puffiness in your body and your skin. You can see it. And it is challenging, especially, living in LA. We have access to so many good vegan restaurant. So I'm curious, like, what are some of your go-to spots? So we have a bunch of listeners in LA, but also for my own curiosity.
Yeah, so I really, really like, first of all, I cook basically every day.
Yeah, where's your restaurant, Chris? When are you gonna have a restaurant?
Yeah, we go out very little, but we go to little places like Vegan Glory, which is just here, kind of in the mid-city West Hollywood area, and it's a fantastic, just like little. They kind of have all different food. They've been around, I think, for like 20 years. Just
Okay.
a little family-owned place in a strip mall. We go to Pura Vida often. They're great for Italian. And then there's this new place called Hello Sunshine Kitchen, and it's in Culver City, and they're pretty much like whole food plant-based, but really, really delicious salads, bowls, like fast casual kind of place. And if we're craving sushi, we go to Kusaki. But tomorrow I'm actually coming to your side of town and trying out
Mackin?
the Makan Vegan. Yes.
Ah, you're gonna love it. This is such a good one.
Yeah, so I'm excited to try that because I hear about it constantly, but if you know LA, you know that to get from one side of town to the other is a commitment. So,
It's a
but
day
we have a
trip.
it's a day trip. It's a day trip. So we're day tripping it tomorrow to Mac and Vegan, and we're excited.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah, you guys are gonna have a good time. They have delicious food. Their Ruffman roll and Philly roll is
Okay.
really good. I just order that stuff every time I go
Yeah.
there. Yeah.
Yeah. You guys are really close to there, right? That's your neighborhood?
I'm like 15 minutes away from it.
Okay.
So yeah, I was doing my finances last month. I looked at my budget. I spent $650 at Mac and Sushi last month, just Ivy and
Wee.
I. Yeah.
Wow.
If you go there and you eat like a decent amount of food, it'll cost you over
Yeah.
100 bucks easy.
Yeah.
Each roll is like 20 to 25 bucks,
Yeah.
like this specialty ones. But yeah, the food is delicious. So
Good.
yeah, that's LA for you, man. You eat out like 5 times and you're 600 bucks deep into it.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding.
Yeah.
That's why we don't. Yeah.
So I was joking about it, but have you ever considered opening a restaurant for yourself, or just, I know it's a different ball game to be in the restaurant business. So yeah, anything, something you've ever considered?
It's definitely not out of the question. You know, growing up in the restaurant industry, I saw like how limited amount of time my grandparents had to be with the rest of the family, and
Yeah.
really all of the time we were together, it was at the restaurant. It revolved around the restaurant. You know, anytime we could get away for a family vacation, we had to close the restaurant. And so
Yeah.
I just know what it involves. I know what having that brick and mortar actually takes. And so for me right now, it's just, you know, I really enjoy doing on camera stuff. I work with Yoegg as well. And so I travel with them and go and demo their product at restaurants and food shows and different things like that. And so I kind of like the versatility of my current situation, where I can go into people's homes or do events, and then I can also throw some other things in there as well. So every day is a little different, you know?
Yeah, I get it. I would never have a physical location for anything. I
Yeah.
love traveling, the freedom too much. We might be organizing an event, a Fit Vegan event for some of our clients in potentially the summer. So I'll let you know, because I want to do like a cooking segment for the people that would be coming. So yeah, we're looking at renting. It's a little bit different here in LA. I was like, man, I want to rent a mansion and just kind of host the event there. And they're like, you can have 5 people max. I'm like, I want like 40 people. So it's a different ball game, but I'll definitely let you know once we put something together.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's crazy here because you used to be able to do that, but then everybody started having like parties of 200 people at all these mansions, and so
Yeah.
they completely shut down the way you're allowed to rent those things out now.
And then you can rent a mansion, but it's like 500 bucks an hour. And so if you want to be able to rent it for like 2 days straight, you're spending a significant amount of money more than an
Yeah.
Airbnb.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll have to connect because I might have some resources for you.
Okay, cool. I appreciate
Yeah.
that. Wanted to ask you, where can people kind of find out about like the cooking that you're doing? I know that you have some recipes, and if people are in the LA area or not and they want to hire you, how can people kind of learn more?
Yeah, so you can always follow me on Instagram, Vegan Chef Chris Tucker. That's kind of the best way to go, and then all of my links are going to be there in the bio. And I post really about everything that's coming up. If we're doing a cooking class somewhere, or if we're holding, you know, a wellness event of sorts, we do different things like that throughout the year. And then also, you know, any events that I'm doing the food on, I always promote those as well. And if they're, you know, sometimes they're local here in LA, but then also times they could be not. So we'll have some
Yeah.
things coming up later in the year where we'll be in other parts of the US doing certain things. So yeah, that's definitely the best place to follow and find out what's coming up.
Beautiful. Well, I'll put the links down below to your Instagram for people to follow you and kind of get access to all the links. Love to ask you, Chris, as a last question, what are words of wisdom that you would pass on to an aspiring vegan chef that might be listening?
I would say that Just remind yourself that you can swap any animal product out in a meal with something that is not animal based and still make it delicious. And remember that you can do really big things in life. Like you can do big things like transition yourself from, a diet of eating meat and dairy to one that's, fresh and green. You can transition your clients to eating that way as well, and it's not as scary as you think. It's actually really tasty.
Yeah, and it's getting, I think it's becoming easier with, like you mentioned, some of the tools and, for example, like people like you posting content and educating people. So
For sure.
there's no more excuses. There's so many resources out there. Well, Chris, I
Absolutely.
want to say a massive thank you for taking the time to jump on the podcast with me. I really appreciate it. I'm happy that we got connected at the event, and we'll for sure do either do an event together or make a YouTube video
Yeah.
about us cooking some food. I'm a terrible chef. I come from the world of bodybuilding, which was, the chicken, rice, broccoli. So
Yeah.
I know how to do tofu, rice, and broccoli and hot sauce and mustard.
Yeah.
That's why I have Ivy in my life. She's expanding my skills, but
Bro.
definitely looking forward to learning from you.
Amazing, amazing. That sounds great.
Beautiful. So everyone, be sure to check out Chris's link, give him a follow, and ultimately, if you need a private chef in LA, definitely hire him, and we will see you guys in the next episode. Bye.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed the episode, be sure to rate the podcast as it helps us grow and spread our message. And if you know this will help and resonate with someone, be sure to send it their way so that they can have the opportunity to level up their life as well.